Hello, this is Brad Warren, and you're listening to Beyond the Event, a youth ministry podcast presented by Christ and Youth, where we help you maintain momentum between the mountaintops. Today's episode of this podcast is I'll say this, it's not a topic that I have a lot of expertise in. It's something that I struggle with a lot, and an area that I'm hoping to be convicted in a little bit in my conversation. So we're talking about rhythms, healthy rhythms in ministry. We're in a season at Christ and Youth where we are wrapping up a Superstart tour. I sincerely hope that we got to see you at Superstart this year, or that we're going to see you at Superstart this year. And we are like pedal to the metal, fifth gear, getting ready for Move and Mix this summer. Engage is happening, is going to happen, all of the above. Things are a little crazy, a little hectic. A lot of times that can bleed into my personal life and just made me feel real tired. And I'm not good at finding health and healthy rhythms in that time. So a guy that I know who can speak to this with a lot of wisdom is my guest today. His name is Jerron Scott. If you recognize that name, he speaks for us at Move during the summers. He's one of my very, 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 very favorite preachers that we have at Move. And he lives here in town. He's the senior minister of Christ Church of Joplin. So I get to run into him all the time, which is a real blessing. He's also a professor at Ozark Christian College. So not only is he very pastoral, ministerial, but he also is a really, really smart guy. One of the smartest guys that I know. And I'm really excited for you to hear from him. So let's go over to my conversation with Jerron. Jerron Scott, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for letting me come, man.
Bro, you rolled in wearing a hat that says Dad Gang.
So this was like... No, go ahead.
We've been talking for a while and I haven't asked you about your kid.
Oh, dude.
First time dad to a...
He'll be 6 months in 3 days.
6 month old.
Mm-hmm.
Dad Gang.
Mm-hmm.
How's it been?
The best, dude.
Yeah, because I think I saw you like 3 weeks after.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, how you doing, man? And you just laughed at me.
It was like, I'm tired. I don't know how I'm doing. I don't know my name.
But we're past that.
Past that. Made it through that. He sleeps.
Yeah.
So, you know, great. There's that. He sleeps.
Yeah.
But it's great, dude. I mean, when I found out he was going to be a boy, there was this weird thing that happened in me. This shot of like manliness of they're like, it's a boy. And I was like, that's my boy.
Yeah.
When he was born, it was honestly wild how natural it was. Looked at him, it was just like, I'd kill.
Yeah.
I'd fight somebody.
I'm capable of murder. Yeah.
as the months go on, I mean, he changes so fast at this age. So it's one of those things of like, I'll see him. I mean, I just went on a week long trip, back in January. And by time when I left and came back, between that time, I come back and it's like, you look totally different. Like I left and it like, he looked like so much like me. It was disgusting. And I came back and he looked just like his mom. And he's wild. Like doing weird stuff. And it's like, yo, dude, like.
I know Michael and I have a friend who went to Ireland for like 10 days and she came back. I remember we were like sitting having a meal together. And she was looking at her daughter, who's like, I don't know, two and almost two. And she was like, you changed so much. Mm-hmm. And she got all weepy, like mm-hmm. 10 days. Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
Dude, we gave him solid food for the first time 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Did you have some gnarly diapers after that?
Oh, they've been fun. They've been fun. Because it's not all the way solid yet, but it's getting there. So it's like, this is different. I don't know what to do with this.
And like smells like a grown man. A stomach that has only metabolized one thing for its entire existence. And now you're like, sweet potatoes.
Here's a banana. Yeah. dude, we sat him down in the high chair and I was going to feed him and immediately broke down and was like, Chelsea, I can't do this. Like walked back, went to the bathroom, dried it up, came back out, thugged it out.
Well, yeah. as you have to, I guess, as a dad.
Thug it out.
That's dad gang life.
That's that dad gang. Thug it out, dude. Yeah.
Oh man. Well, hey, super grateful that you're here. I always enjoy being around you.
Oh.
Usually it's on the road. It's crazy because we live here in Joplin together.
But, don't see each other.
Except at Bearded Lady. That's it.
But that's an advertisement.
There are a few free association here on Beyond the Event. I have two really great memories of you speaking at Moves. One is New Mexico.
Dude.
2021.
Mm-hmm. That was fun.
The year after the COVID, mm-hmm. right? You got like, your flight was delayed, mm-hmm. delayed, not going to make it. We had a video like queued up, ready to go. Mm-hmm. We were like, Jerron's not going to be here. We got to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And you got out of the car.
Yep.
Left your bag in the car and walked without stopping onto stage.
Yep.
To do your speaker interview.
Yep.
And I was like, this man is the real deal. Because if that was me, I would not be able to formulate single sentence.
Have you ever changed clothes in the car with a man from New York you've never met?
Hi, nice to meet you. What's the weirdest thing that's ever happened to you as an Uber driver? Well, it's about to get worse.
Well, this random guy got in my car, said he was going to preach, and started changing. Yeah. So,
woof.
Funny story.
Yeah, it's like, I love the Lord a lot.
Funny story. I was so disoriented that night. I left my Bible there, and I went to Wheaton a month later. And I think one of CIY's summer workers came up to me in Wheaton and said, hey, you're Jerron, aren't you? And I was like, yeah. And she was like, you left your Bible at this last event, and I've been carrying it around all summer. It was like, dude, you're my favorite.
yeah, it's amazing. So that was one. And then also, we got to work together this last summer.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't told you this yet, but your sermon this past summer, one of my favorite ones of the entire summer.
Oh, dude.
Like, I don't, you know, how many sermons do you remember that mm-hmm. you've heard? Like, 8,
yeah,
you know, in my entire life that I can be like, yeah, I remember what the point of that sermon was and how it affected me. But the thing, every time I hear the Temptations now,
oh dude,
I'm like, oh man, this is it. The dude. Fruit,
dude,
it's not trying to come out, it just comes out, you know? So anyway, dude. That was one of my faves last summer.
You want to hear a funny thing about that?
Yeah,
I didn't know. So that sermon was on the demoniac, and Galatians 5 was the support text. I didn't know that the first event of the summer.
What?
The Joplin event.
You were here in Joplin.
I was here in Joplin. I preached a sermon on Galatians 5. And I don't think when I was walking on stage and saw the bumper of the demoniac.
Of the Jesus story.
Yeah. Is when I was like, oh no. So like, I'm preaching that sermon, working in my head, how am I going to talk about this? Like, I've got to get the Jesus story in here.
Woof.
Dude.
That's a real thing.
I think I text Nate Carnes after, and I was like, hey, was I supposed to talk about the Jesus story more? I think he's like, yeah, work that in next time. Work that thing in next time.
Nate Carnes, I told him this weekend, is one of the people on staff that when I... like, if I feel like I've let him down, I feel like I've let my dad down.
Oh, dude, yeah.
Yeah, he's got real strong dad vibes, and I'm like, I'm sorry I disappointed you.
Every time. Like, I would never wash a car with Nate Carnes.
No.
Like, never.
No.
I don't want to.
I'm never holding a flashlight for that guy.
Nope. I don't want to do it.
Yeah. Anyway, great guy, though.
Love him.
Love him. Love him. Okay, let's talk about what we came here to talk about, which is having healthy rhythms in ministry, something, Jerron, that I am not qualified to speak about, not good at it. So, I don't know. I feel like CIY and ministry life are like similar, because there's times of real intense intensity. Mm-hmm. Let's just say that, right? And then there are times when it's like, okay, we can settle in. We can have a more responsible pace as we go about things.
Mm-hmm.
We were just talking about how it's like Easter time,
mm-hmm.
crazy season, right? But then maybe in the summer things get a little bit more chill. I don't know what your ebb and flow is like, but wanted to have you in because I think you're a very, every time I talk to Jerron Scott I'm always talking to the same guy. Oh, you know what I mean? Just very steady person, and a person who I feel like might have some insight on this topic of just like putting healthy rhythms in place. So,
we'll see.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. How do you feel about that?
It's a fun conversation.
Yeah.
And it's a terribly fun conversation.
Great. I'm glad you think so.
Yeah.
Because I'm sweating.
We'll see what happens.
I'm like, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say. Well, let's start here. How does it affect you when you're in a season when you feel like you do have healthy rhythms in place mm-hmm. versus when you don't?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's the evidence of kind of both of those things?
I mean, I'll tell you, I'll start with the evidence of not. I was actually just talking to one of Ozark's grad students for their project about some of this stuff a few hours ago. I mean, personally, when I'm not, when I don't have healthy rhythms, I feel it in my brain and emotionally. So I get really foggy in the brain when I don't have healthy rhythms. Also, like if I could describe it as like spaghetti brain, just everything is intertwined. Nothing makes sense. I'm just kind of going at
it's
it.
It's all just living up there.
Days bleed together.
Yeah.
Time moves fast. And then I feel it. I constantly feel stress. Honestly, one of the things I feel, this sense of like, I feel violated when somebody asks me to do something, you know, because it's like, I'm tired.
How dare you
ask me to do that? Like, I am stressed. Could you not tell?
But also like, yeah, that's the funny thing too, mm-hmm. is like you expect people to perceive
mm-hmm.
that you are like at your wit's end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's kind of funny.
No one knows.
And no one knows. So I'm frustrated with you because you couldn't read my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's perfect for relationships.
Yeah.
It's chapter one of my new book.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel it. Definitely feel it. So that's when I don't. And honestly, when I don't, I mean, this is a big one. I actually just shared this with my church this past Sunday, is I get terribly overwhelmed.
Hmm.
Because of how much I do. It's like, if I don't have healthy rhythms, I will drown. So I was just telling my church last week about it a few weeks ago, like I didn't want to get out of bed one morning because I just felt super overwhelmed. And it's all so much. I'm failing at all of it. I want to go crawl up in a hole, like no one talk to me kind of thing. So those would be symptoms of not. Symptoms of, I mean, there's definitely a constant, I guess, communion with God. Mm-hmm. So even, I mean, the thought behind it, the idea of like the rule of life, and it's, I mean, the idea of a rule of is like back then where you have the trellis. You've got a vine and the trellis pushes it back up. So Jesus says like, abide in me. Well, the trellis, mm-hmm. that structure is what helps you invite. So I mean, the idea of like, if I have a healthy rhythm or even a healthy rule of life, it's like it's geared to abiding in Jesus. So I mean, just my communion with God is actually there,
right?
I've got a relationship with Jesus practically. The desert monks talked about this a lot, but I feel it like this inner repose, inner peace, inner tranquility.
Mm-hmm.
That's not to say I'm not busy. And also not to say like days don't get long and things aren't hard, but it's like at the core, there's like a tranquility because I'm with God and I'm moving with God. I'm probably, my thoughts are well ordered.
So I want to back up. So being busy and being in a season of like health when it comes to your rhythms are not mutually exclusive.
Absolutely not.
Right.
That's
the important thing that I wanted to kind of hone in on.
Yeah, absolutely. And you see that. This is the Dallas Willard, the John Mark Comer, the John Ortberg. I mean, they all give the same example. I mean, Jesus was extremely busy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you look at the Gospels and it's like there's constant demand. He's constantly moving. I mean, and there's some things that the gospel writers say to where it's like, dude, that was a sentence, but that seems like such a long day. When they're like, they brought all the sick people and Jesus healed them.
Every single one.
You know, it's like, dude, that's stressful medical missions.
Dude, the story of feeding the 5,000 is mm-hmm. crazy.
Yeah, like, that had to take
hours. Whole day. But I mean, start to finish, that day
mm-hmm.
would kill me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, there's the inner tranquility. I mean, some other signs, I'm probably learning when my rhythms are healthy.
Interesting.
I'm doing things that lead to learning, reading or reflecting. I'm hanging out with friends. I'm actually having healthy, just non-work relationships. Mm-hmm. So those are symptoms of healthy rhythms.
So do you think, I can't tell if this is an observation or a bias that I have. So maybe you can help me clear it up. I feel like I perceive that ministers, people who are in ministry, are particularly bad at this.
Yes.
Agree with me? Compared to like accountants and whatever. So why do you think that is?
I guess I'll speak autobiographically and even some of what I've heard. If we're not careful, God is work. I mean, so in ministry, the lines bleed.
Totally.
So, I mean,
it's not, I clock in at 8, I clock out at 5.
You know, it's like, am I abiding or am I prepping for a sermon? I don't know. They're the same sometimes. even, I guess, relationships. So a pastor friend in town has helped me out with this a lot over the past few years of, there are people who in ministry that you think are friends, but they see you as minister. Mm. So even when you think you're hanging out, you're always on the clock,
right?
You know, you're the one in the room as the minister.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're almost like the line of when am I working, quote unquote, when am I not? It just gets really blurry. Probably some guilt attached to not, you know, cause it's like Jesus is work and people need help. I mean, I talk to my students at Ozark about this. I think the biggest symptom of that is lack of clarity on who we're serving when we're in ministry. One of the things you see in the life of Jesus is he came as a slave to God, but he was a servant among people, or he belonged to his father, but he served people. I think in ministry, we can get that skewed by saying my primary purpose and motivation is to serve
other people. Yeah.
And when my primary motivation is to serve you, you determine what I do and don't do.
Hmm.
As opposed to my primary motivation is to serve God and he determines what I do and don't do.
Well, and a lot of the things you're talking about, like people can't give you peace and inner tranquility and all those kinds of things. So if you're just pouring yourself out in service to other people, it could return void, in a pretty damaging way.
Yeah. The last one, last thing that comes to mind is, I think we think we're too important.
Woof.
Yeah.
Yeah.
you know, it's like if
save
I
save the best for last.
If
jeez.
I don't, who will?
Yeah.
You know, that kind of mentality. Or
it's
I've
like
got
someone
to.
Will.
Yeah, somebody will. I mean, one of the things, I mean, I was joking, Alabama's football coach Nick Saban, one of the best coaches of all time.
Retired.
Coach. And yeah. I think before the weekend was over, they hired a replacement.
Yeah.
So it was like my man probably didn't clear out his office before they hired a new one.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's going to happen in ministry.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the elders, the board, whoever, like, you are very much replaceable, even from a work standpoint, but even in terms of like the kingdom of God.
But it sounds like you're saying something negative or critical when you say that, but there's so much freedom in that.
Yeah, it's freedom. It is what it is. I mean, I think, what is it, like Moses? I mean, Joshua starts with like, Moses died.
Yeah.
God said, Joshua, let's go. It's like, dude, that's nice, man. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Freedom.
Yeah. Just time to go. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when I'm gone, there'll be someone after me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, that's really cool. So, anyway, all that to say, youth pastors, anybody who may or may not be listening to this podcast, decent chance, that they've had to deal with some of this. And I think there's just, there's kind of an always on mentality, like you're talking about, that gotta push back against. So, here's what I want to talk about. I want to talk about, because when I think of rhythms, I think of like daily rhythms, right? And then I think of rhythms that are more like long-term, you know, sabbatical that you take once every 7 years or whatever. And then there's all kinds of things in between too. Where do you want to start? I don't know.
Wherever you want to start, dude.
No, let's start with the short term.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start with the daily stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, because like Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of pastors out there who have been in ministry for 5 years and they're just like, oh man, if I can just get through to this sabbatical, you know, then I'll be able to hit reset button. It's like, well, that's not probably a super healthy way to.
If you're saying that, that's not good.
Yeah. It's like, okay. You got 720 days or whatever between now and then that you can begin to kind of try to figure this out a little bit too. So yeah, let's talk about that, the importance of daily rhythms, why they're difficult to maintain. And I don't, I want to weirdly, I guess, like kind of separate this from a conversation about spiritual disciplines. Is that weird?
No. Let's try it. Yeah. Let's see what happens.
Yeah. Let's see what happens. Because like being in prayer daily and being in scripture daily, being in holy communion with each other daily, it's all great. Want to do those things, but I think those are like understood. We're all on the same page about that, you know? So let's talk about some of those other things, some of those, day in and day out, you know, what, how can I recognize when I'm getting a little bit off balance? How can I correct that? What can I put into my, schedule in order to make sure that I don't get to those places. Obviously, you can't speak for everybody. You can only speak for you. So what role do those kinds of things play in Jerron's God's life?
Yeah. I know. I mean, the biggest thing for me, I mean, some of the big things for me that motivate all of this, I guess I'll start there if that's okay, and then go from there.
You are in charge. You're driving the ship. I'm just here.
I'll shoot and see if I make it. See if I hit what you asked for. I mean, as of late, the biggest motivation for me has been, I mean, two scriptures. One, I mean, come to me all who are weary and heavy laden, and I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. You'll find rest for, or you'll find rest for your souls, for I'm gentle and lowly in heart. And yeah, so there's that. And
not
then,
not a plug for Move or Mix, by the way.
No. Is that the scripture this year?
Yeah,
And then obviously the John 15.
I don't think we're going to say all who are weary and heavy laden.
Sorry.
We'll probably pick a different version than that. But that's the one that I grew up knowing.
Same. That's
and
all
every
I
every time
know.
I hear like, come to me all you who are weary and heavy laden and I will give you rest. That's what I think of.
When somebody says something else, I'm like, that's not right. I don't know who those people are. I only know people who are heavy laden.
Yeah, exactly. I'm very heavy laden right now, as a matter of fact.
I'm not
that's
tired
how I describe
of heavy
myself.
So I mean that, and then John 15, abide in me, I'm the vine, you're the branches. So I mean the heart behind it all is like, I'm made to be with Jesus. Like, and when I say be, I mean that, like, we're just sitting here, turn the mics off. We're just being. So it's like, that's the end of me, or that's my telos. That's my end. That's my goal. So even thinking about rhythms, it's like, okay, if that's what I'm made for, then that's what, that's the direction things should be moving in. And that's even the why. Think Augustine, like, you made us for ourselves. Our hearts are restless until they find their rest in you. It's like, this is the only way I'll be human, is to be with you. So that's a big thing behind it, motivation wise. One of the things I've noticed in my life on the cause behind unhealthy rhythms, so Stephen Covey talks about this in Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. He says that we often neglect the important for the urgent. So he has this like quadrant. I think it's the Eisenhower quadrant of important, non-urgent, things of that sort. Things that are important are rarely urgent, and vice versa. There's some times where it's an overlap of like this important
thing
is right
like,
now.
If I cut my hand off,
you know, that's important and urgent.
Right. Yeah.
But there's a lot of stuff that's very urgent that's not quote unquote important.
Right.
So one of the things that would be urgent and not quote unquote important, and when I say urgent, I mean feel an immediate demand with consequences if I don't get it done.
But which a lot of times is a construct.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a feel, it's either what we feel or what someone else feels.
Is making us feel. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So life with Jesus, I mean, I'd say most healthy rhythms fall in that important, not urgent box. So, I mean, reading my Bible. If I don't read my Bible today, I'm not going to feel consequences, is what it is. If I don't hang out with friends this week, I'm not going to feel many major consequences.
Introvert to the max, aren't you?
I'm actually an extrovert.
Are you really?
I am.
Bro, if I didn't hang out with my friends for a week, I would die.
Really?
Yeah, I would just not be able to move.
Oh, dude, I don't hang out with my friends for a week, and I'm like, I'll see you next week.
You're one of the like, hey, you wanna get lunch sometime? It's like, yeah, what's your July look like?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's legit. It's like, see you next year. I don't know. I even think working out is one of those things that's important, not urgent. So all that to say, the daily demands of the urgent, especially, I mean, right now, our society is very fast paced. Do more. Do now. Social media is killing it.
Do
our
everything.
Phone's killing it. I mean, yeah. Work is always with me. Somebody can always text with work. So, I mean, that's constantly pulling us in that direction away from the important. So personally, if I ever fall into a space of unhealthy habits and rhythms, it's because I've devoted myself to the urgent. And just kind of went lily-gaggy on the important.
Right.
I don't know, symptoms, how can I tell when I've slipped into that point? I think I mentioned it. I mean, I think stupid.
Yeah.
And I feel angry.
Yeah.
Those are signs for me. I get very angry and I cannot think.
Do you ever have to be told that you're in that space?
There is actually one time, one of my best friends, he's on staff with us right now. A few years ago, I was venting about something and he asked me if I needed to take a nap. He was being serious. It was so humiliating, yeah, but I had to admit,
it's yes. Like, bro, you need a snack and a nap. And I come back and talk about it.
I don't think I knew the answer was yes. I don't think I had it in me to say yes. I just said, shut up.
That's funny.
See, I mean, those would be the symptoms for me as I feel it internally.
Yeah. Yeah. So I, when it comes to those daily rhythms, I love that you mentioned some that are unique to you.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, a lot of people will probably resonate with, you know, going to the gym, I think is one for a lot of people, not for my soft self, but, yeah. So what makes it, I don't know, this conversation is so weird because it feels like it should be easy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like when you're talking about it, it's almost like it's oversimplified because it's like, well, yeah, of course I can do this. Why can't I do this?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go to the gym every day. I'm going to go to the gym 5 days a week and I'm going to eat healthy and I'm going to do whatever other things. I'm going to hang out with my friends. I'm going to, you know, make sure that I'm doing things that Jesus can work through in order to give me that sense of inner peace and tranquility. Right.
Yeah.
So why is it hard? That's what I don't understand is like, how come we can sit here and talk about it like it's so easy? And then when we go out and actually have to live it for some reason, it's like you're flipping a switch off.
Yeah. I mean, everything's working against it. I mean, on multiple fronts. I mean, there's the spiritual front. I mean, the desires of the flesh are against the desires of the spirit. So, I mean, even internally, the moment you want to like follow Jesus into this healthy lifestyle, your flesh is going to say, no, I don't. So you've got an internal pull. For sure, the way we work in America, our way of working in the United States is not conducive to a healthy life rhythm. I mean, reward is on the other side of overworking, you know?
Mm-hmm. Recognition.
Yeah. I guess what's socially acceptable and taboo. I mean, so a lot of my students at the Bible college now, I mean, they're putting in 22, 23 hours a semester. You know, it's just my bad students are putting in 23 hours. Yeah. You know, it's not just my good ones, my bad ones. And it's just like, why? Well, I want to graduate in 3.5 years. For what? I don't know. That's just what I'm supposed to do.
Because I'm in a hurry.
You know? So it's even like as ministers, once again, it's like, I think we feel as if we've got to work more, that our work days, our working hours have to be more than the average person because it's for Jesus.
Right.
When
it's like, that's not how we measure success. Like, you know, that's not a thing. But also I feel like it's crazy because for a minister, a lot of these pressures that you're talking about, like if you look at them through the lens of a high school student, it's like, well, of course, you've got all these billion things pulling you in different directions. You've got your soccer team pulling you in one direction. You've got family, you've got school, you've got church, you got all this kind of stuff going on, all the chaos in your life. Like, how can you ever find any kind of sense of balance, right? For ministers, it's wild because like all of those things that are pulling you in different directions look good.
Yep.
You know, they look holy.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of weird. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you can speak to that at all.
Yeah. I mean, it's baptized. I honestly think it's our culture that we've baptized. Like, you can make anything look good if you baptize it.
Mm-hmm.
So I genuinely think it's that. I mean, it's the same symptoms. I mean, overwork, hustle, achievement. This is a different one. Read this philosophical book. This guy, if you notice language we use, we see ourselves as, we see ourselves almost as technology, and mechanics. So even when we talk about rest, we say, I have to recharge. Oh. And it's like, you know, yeah. and it's subtle.
I'm drained.
And I don't think I don't think people go around thinking, I talk about myself like a machine.
Right.
But the book, this philosopher in this book was saying the way we think about machinery has become such a fixture in our society that it's bled over into everything. To where, I mean, one of the biggest symptoms is we validate ourselves by our production. I mean, you know, that's machinery.
Yeah. And like some of the metrics that we use too. Mm-hmm. Like, CLI has been fighting back against this for a long time. I don't think you're the kind of guy that would do this, but like, you go to a youth ministry conference and everyone wants to know, like, they can't have a conversation without saying, like, so how many kids you pull, you know, or whatever.
Yep.
Yep. Those kinds of things. Like, we're measuring ourselves using the world's metrics. Mm-hmm. And like you said, we've baptized it.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, like, oh, every one of those numbers represents a soul. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, but that's not what you're asking.
Oh, yeah. No. No. There's this old church father who says that Satan persecutes us overtly and covertly. The overt is like, government comes. The covert stuff is he'll get us to believe lies and live certain ways subtly. And I think for us specifically, I don't know if the army will ever come knocking on our door because we're Christian, but I'm convinced that covert persecutions happen from the inside of, I'm going to get you all to live hustle culture. I'm going to get you to live achievement mindset. I'm going to get you to think about yourself as machinery and value production overall. I'm going to, you know, I genuinely think that, this guy, Jathani, I'm going to get you to live for God and not with God. I mean, I think a lot of those subtle lies, Satan's like come through the back door.
For God and not with God. Uh-huh. That's an interesting one. Because for God is, that's an efficiency, right? Like, what can I get done on his behalf rather than like, this is my friend, this is my father, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of interesting.
I read a book recently, which I was taught this big time. I mean, God showed me this big time this summer. Read a book that is for my doctoral program. A guy said that ministry becomes law when we think it refers to what we do. He says ministry ministry becomes gospel when we recognize it as what Jesus is doing and is inviting us to participate in. So if we see ministry as primarily what I do, then even if we say like, this is me, like I'm doing this to thank God, it's like, so now I've got this weird obligation to save a bunch of people as a sign of gratitude. It's like, that's law. Gospel is Jesus invited me into this and I get to join in with them.
Okay. So that was a detour. So I want to circle back to kind of the beginning of that conversation. You're describing all of the aspects of culture that push back against our ability to live out healthy rhythms, you know, to discipline ourselves to have healthy rhythms. So how have you personally, or how do you pastor your church to fight back against that?
The biggest would be example. I mean, that's the major, as a leader, I think that's the biggest thing, is exemplifying, a healthy life. If I don't exemplify a healthy life, no one's going to live one.
Sure.
Genuinely like living it and even fighting back against, I guess, some either internal pressures within my own self and even some pressures from people in the church. Cause I could convince myself or someone in our church could try to convince me that I should be living in this unhealthy way. So one, fighting back against those pressures and saying, no, I'm going to build. God's called me and you're paying me to watch my life and doctrine. And a major part of that is I'm going to live a healthy life. So there's that, just that conviction of I've got to exemplify this against the headwinds. Build it into our staff. It's built into our staff culture. So, I mean, one of our first staff value is start with who. This is built off of Ruth Haley Barton says, I'm paraphrasing, the most important thing you can offer somebody is a transformed life. So it's like the first task on your job description is a healthy life that opens you up to be transformed by God. So our work rhythms are built around that.
Do people, I mean, you've been in your role at CCOJ for a minute now. So people probably kind of gotten used to you, but, is there have you ever had to deal with people who get frustrated with that mentality with your staff where it's like they want, or they have expectations that everybody thinks this way. Everybody is an achiever. Everybody wants to push go, 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 go. And I'm trying to have this conversation with this person, or I'm trying to work alongside this person who I'm not receiving that back from.
Yeah.
And that there's frustration there. I know that's a pretty like niche question.
Oh, so yeah. Know, no, I'd say the pushback that comes to mind has been from within our leadership circle.
Oh, interesting.
If there's been any pushback that's come from the congregation, it's never come to me. And they probably just gotten mad and left without saying anything, honestly. But it's mainly been from within our own leadership circle.
Yeah. Or it's like, hey, this is the way we're going to live our lives. And
matching up against different assumptions of what, I mean, even I'd say some within, I mean, our team have or do run businesses even. So, I mean, they're coming in with that set of assumptions. And so my question is, what is that the right way, though? And why does it have to be that way? What is the way it should be? We don't have to operate just off of normal working assumptions.
Yeah.
So it's come from within the team more than without.
Yeah. Okay. Bro, I could talk to you forever about this. Okay. Also, you're like the smartest guy I know.
Never.
No, for real. I've never heard somebody like, listener, no notes. He has no notes. When he quotes all these things and says all these things, they're just in his brain. I don't know
if I'm just making this up, dude.
Yeah. The joy of fact checking you. Like, did Augustine say that? I don't know.
The joy of no notes is you can make stuff up and people are like, oh.
Oh, man.
No one's going to listen to me preach ever again.
Yeah, they will. Okay. So that's kind of on the daily rhythm side, right? Are there like checkpoint rhythms that are important to you that you put in place that it's like, hey, every summer I do this. Once a year I try to do this. I take a sabbatical once every 7 years. You're not old enough to really settle into that rhythm.
No, not there.
you know, or whatever they may be.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, for sure every year my wife and I take a retreat together. And once a year, I take a retreat, at least once a year. It plays out twice a year, or it's played out twice a year more often than not, but I take a retreat personally just to.
What does that look like for you? Are you a nature guy?
No.
You get out in the woods?
No.
No?
No.
That's what I would do.
I'm a city guy.
Okay.
So it's I'm going to get in a hotel somewhere.
Okay.
And I'm walking around downtown
for a
week.
It's like my retreat is a retreat, but someone else better change my sheets.
Yes. It's like put me downtown, give me a coffee shop, let me walk around, let me read, let me shop. I'll pray while shopping.
Yeah. Why not?
Jesus is also in Zara.
Yeah.
So he exists there too. I read a lot as well. So I'll recluse and read.
Yeah.
So, I mean, those are two big ones for me. And then this has normally happened for our church. Our church will take a week. The church as a whole will take a weekend and like we've done like a whole church camp type thing. So that's been fun because it's like now together with the broader family, we're just out here hanging out and whatever, worshiping, praying. I generally don't preach those. Yeah. So I'm just like there.
Yeah.
So those are three major stones.
That's a really good thing to bring up, because I feel like preaching has been a big thing in this conversation that we've actually improved quite a lot on. Mm. I feel like when I was growing up, the lead minister at a church preached 50 times
every
year,
every week.
Yeah. You mm-hmm. know, or whatever it may be. And he got a couple Sundays off to go and mm-hmm. go on vacation with his whatever. But like, you don't have to do that.
No.
How many Sundays a year you preach?
Maybe 36.
Yeah.
My intern, Jonathan's over here. His name's Jake. I mean, he'll tell you the year of 2023, I didn't hardly preach. Just ended up not. I mean, maybe 30 Sundays last year. I preached.
Which is still a lot.
It felt like nothing. It did. Because it turned out maybe 2 to 3 weeks a month. So I was frequently not preaching.
So that's another one of those like rhythm things too that you can establish, that it's like that expectation mm-hmm. that a lot of preachers put on themselves, that it's like, this is my job. If mm-hmm. I'm not standing in front of my congregation preaching, mm-hmm. they're going to think that I'm not doing the work that they've hired me to do
mm-hmm.
or whatever that may be, you know, like you got to kind of deal with some of those assumptions as well.
Mm-hmm.
And for the youth minister, that, you know, shakes out a little bit differently, but mm-hmm. The principle is still there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So are sabbaticals part of your guys' like church life?
I haven't hit it yet. It's not been long enough.
How old are you? 29 years old?
30.
You're 30?
Haven't hit it yet. Theoretically, I've got one coming.
Okay.
I just realized that.
There you go.
Got one coming.
Happy to toss that on your plate there.
Thank you. Theoretically, it's time. But yeah, even within our elder team, which is volunteer primarily, we've got our elder team take sabbaticals.
That's good.
So we're on a rotation of each elder gets a 3-month sabbatical.
Within the year? Help me out.
So the way it works out is the rotation is within 12 months, you'll get, like if you got one this month in March, in 12 more months, the option's coming back to you.
Gotcha.
So it's we work it out in some weird way like that to where every year and
you get to step away
for 3 months.
Yeah.
So yeah, not everybody takes everyone, because it comes frequently enough to where some of the guys on the team are like, I'm fine.
Yeah.
But we've had elders, they've taken them
the jump
all throughout last year.
And that's not a sign of weakness is the thing. Like
it's health.
But some people in their mind mm-hmm. think like, okay, elder A that doesn't take it is mm-hmm. strong.
Mm-hmm.
Elder B that does take it is weak. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of us right now are mm-hmm. fighting that in our minds, and that's crazy.
Yep. Yep. It's a weird mindset, man. I'm telling you.
But
it's
a weird mindset. So ingrained in us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's crazy, man.
Yeah.
Anyway. It's a lot to think about.
Yeah.
It's a lot to think about.
Yeah.
I'm gonna be chewing on this for a while, but you know, Jerron, I'm really grateful for you.
Same, man.
You know, if you do take a sabbatical soon, please not during the summer. That's all I have to say.
Never.
I need to run into you and move.
Never.
It makes my summer. It really does. So.
My sabbatical is Lee University.
Yeah. I just camp out. Give me that twin XL, baby.
Dude, Cleveland, Tennessee is the spot. God meets me there.
Yeah. Dude, me too. People don't understand. Everyone else, they think Michigan. They're like, Michigan, that's the spot. I'm telling you right now, if you go to Michigan, cancel your spots, go to Lee, and tell me that it is not better.
Dude, I'm telling you, ain't nothing like...
They won't. They won't do that. They're not going to listen to me.
No, but, anyway. But it's fun.
All right. But we'll see you on the road this summer, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, good. Well, Jerron, like I said, super grateful for you, grateful for the work. Man. I mean, I love that I live in a city with you, and like, I don't attend your church, but I'm so grateful that, you know, you're... out there preaching the gospel to the people of Joplin, and just really appreciate you.
Oh, same, man.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks for letting me.
I told you. I told you. So much wisdom, so much knowledge. Really thankful for Jaron. He like is the feelings that he described when he is in a season of good rhythm, are feelings that he makes me feel. When I'm around Jaron, I feel a sense of peace. And I think that's like the highest compliment that I can pay somebody, honestly, because I need so much of that in my life. And I'm grateful for the ways that he challenged me to seek that and challenged me to have a little bit of discipline and fight back against the things that the world is trying to influence me in, and just be with God instead of work for God. That's a convicting thing and something that I'm looking forward to processing over the next several days. So I am going to read our blessing. Actually, Michael, do you want to read this? I can't read right now.
Yeah, I'd love to. May God show you grace and bless you. May he make his face shine on you. May you experience the love of Christ, through whom God gives you fullness of life. May you be strengthened by his power. May Christ himself make his home in your heart, that you would be full of his love and grace, and that those you serve would see Jesus in you.
Today's episode was produced by Michael Hester, Lauren Bryan, and myself. A special huge thank you to the legend, Jaron Scott, for being with us today and for imparting so much wisdom on all of us. And you know what? Thank you as much, equally, for listening. If you liked what you heard, please share this episode. I know you know someone who needs to hear what Jaron had to say. Send this to them. That would be great. That would be a great way that you could help them out, a great way that you could help us out. And in the meantime, you know, you can reach us on the CIY Community Facebook group or by email at podcast@ciy.com. See you next time.